Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We hear portions of speeches made September 6th by Republican Rob Simmons and former President George H.W. Bush. He visited the state to stump for Simmons. The two former CIA men reminisced about the past. Simmons brought up the Church and Pike committees, which investigated illegal activities by the CIA. We will then be joined by scholar, author, and civil liberties expert Christopher H. Pyle. He worked for Senator Church.
And what happened out of that period was that many of our human intelligence sources dried up.
People were leaving in droves, and those of us serving on difficult and dangerous missions overseas were demoralized.
He implies that the intelligence committees hurt the CIA. Well, they may have also helped it.
The 2nd District congressional race in Connecticut between three-term incumbent Rob Simmons and Democratic challenger Joe Courtney is another referendum on the war in Iraq. A State Department report just made life more difficult for Rob Simmons and others who claimed Iraq was central to the war on terror and argued that Saddam Hussein was a threat to America. The report confirmed what many already knew, that there was, in fact, no link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. Last week, Rob Simmons asked the White House for what he calls a realistic outline for getting the troops home. He added a positive spin to this call, noting the transfer of command over Iraq's armed forces to Prime Minister Maliki. In the days since, the U.S. military has reported that Iraq's Anbar province is in a military stalemate. More Iraqis and Americans have died. But it will be even more difficult for Rob Simmons and other Republicans to spin the surprise visit by Iraq's Prime Minister Maliki to Iran for his meeting with Iranian leader Ahmadinejad. During the past few months, Rob Simmons and Joe Courtney have been locked in a tight race, with Courtney now leading by roughly 5 points. In their 2002 standoff, Simmons beat Courtney by a mere 8 points. And back then, Simmons had the advantage of making regular appearances on national TV news to talk about the threat posed by Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. In October of 2002, Simmons made an official announcement that he had used his CIA expertise to review the documents on Iraq's weapons program. He said those documents proved Iraq was an immediate threat to Israel and the continental United States. In May of the following year, constituents tried to hold him accountable for the remarks at a forum on the Iraq War in Norwich, Connecticut. We hear the moderator asking an audience member's question about WMDs in Iraq.
Regarding finding the weapons of mass destruction, is the CIA incompetent or is Bush a liar?
My guess is the person who asked the question probably does their own answer. And I appreciate the question. I have expressed publicly for many years my concern over the degraded capabilities of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. Our intelligence community has one of the most incredible technological capabilities of any country in the world. And by that I mean when we collect overhead imagery and from that develop aerial photographs of one form or another, which we can then use to analyze what's going on the ground, we're among the best in the world. Probably the best. When we intercept encoded communications and decrypt those and analyze those, we're probably among the best in the world. But when it comes to human sources of intelligence, we're not so good. And you can trace the degrading of those human sources of intelligence to a couple of critical events over the last 25 years.
We will put a transcript of Rob Simmons' May 2003 remarks on the website at talknationradio.org. We turn now to a portion of Rob Simmons' introductory remarks for former President George H.W. Bush on September 6th at the Water's Edge Resort and Spa. As you will hear, he finds fault with the 1970s Church and Pike committees investigating the CIA for charges ranging from assassination to the illegal surveillance of Americans.
My second memory goes back to 1975, when I was serving overseas as a case officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. The agency was under attack. The Pike and the Church Committee had engaged in a series of devastating investigations. Our senior officers were being raked over the coals. People were leaving in droves, and those of us serving on difficult and dangerous missions overseas were demoralized by the headlines that we were reading every day. At this critical time, in the history of our intelligence community and in the history of our Central Intelligence Agency, President Ford named you the Director of Central Intelligence. What a relief. You understood the intelligence business. You reaffirmed that our jobs, our difficult and dangerous jobs on the front line of the Cold War, we're in the national security interest. You let us know that the sacrifices that we were making overseas, that our families were making overseas, were worth the effort. You stood by the agency and its people. You lifted our morale. You did a great job. Thank you, Mr. President. My third memory is the presidential race of 1979-1980. Somebody who had served as the head of the CIA was running for president. You confirmed in our minds that the intelligence business was an honorable and a patriotic profession. And even a former spy like me might someday leave the dark shadows of espionage and emerge into the bright spotlight of public service and elective office, and yes, even be successful, might even be elected to Congress. Thank you for that inspiration, Mr. President.
Congressman Rob Simmons in Waterford, Connecticut, introducing George H.W. Bush, who had come to Connecticut to stump for him. We turn now to Bush's remarks on the CIA.
It used to be impossible for some to speak up for the agency, but for him to say as proudly that he did, that he's proud to serve, means a lot to me. His understanding of military and intelligence matters is without peer in Washington. And I can say that without fear of contradiction. We need to have leaders who have experience in this war on terror. It's an ongoing battle. And we need people who know realistically what it's like to be out there gathering intelligence, bringing the intelligence to the policymakers, and in his case, knowing what to do with it once you got it. Without a doubt, one of the most fascinating years of my life was spent at Langley out there in Virginia. After President Ford brought me home from China to head the Central Intelligence Agency. Incidentally, I had no idea that he was going to ask me to come back and do that from China. I was sitting on my bicycle riding back from the sports facility there, riding back to our little embassy, and the communicator came up and said, Mr. Ambassador, I've got an important message for you. You better sit down when you hear this one. I said, well, I'm sitting down. I'm on my bicycle. What more do you want, Matt? And he said, this Ford wants you to come back and run CIA. And shortly after that, Deng Xiaoping gave a going away present. I give him great credit for China's change of direction that we all see today. And Deng Xiaoping gave a little lunch for Barbara and me in the Great Hall of the People, a small room off the side. And he said to me, Mr. Bush, have you been spying on us all these years? No, sir. No. I don't know whether they believed it or not, but I hadn't been. I hadn't been. But anyway, I didn't know when I came back all the tech technicalities of intelligence. But I went there, as Rob said, at a time when the CIA had been criticized properly for a handful of things, but improperly and unfairly for so many things. And what happened out of that period was that many of our human intelligence sources dried up. Who wants to be out there undercover in clandestine service only to read his name in the Washington Post or the New Haven Register or any paper? You don't want that. So protection of sources and methods was very important, and that was not being done by a lot of untutored staffers that were unleashed on Capitol Hill, I mean up in Langley. And so it was a tough time there, and I loved my service at the CIA. It was very short, but I met more dedicated people serving their country for the right reasons, without sitting at the head table, without getting any accord whatsoever out publicly. They were there, and they're there today. I went down a while back to a training camp facility and sat next to a woman about 38 years old, and I said, well, how do you happen to be doing this today? Shortly after I saw her, she was wandering around Baghdad in a big covered clothing, and she said, well, I was a lawyer in Boston, and I decided I wanted to do something for my country. I wanted to do something important. I didn't want any credit. And I'm proud to be a part of this important intelligence service. So my point is, Rob saw it firsthand. He lived it. The agency and the intelligence community had many dedicated, important people who are serving with honor and without whom our country would be in deep trouble. Human intelligence is a kind of a dirty business, and people always say, well, you had to deal with Manuel Noriega. I didn't much like Noriega. He tried to kill me, and he's now in jail. He's now in jail in Florida, and I hope they keep the guy in there. But nevertheless, you have to deal sometimes with bad guys. Gentlemen do read other people's mail, and so it's a tough business. But I come back to where I started. Rob understood this. He lived it. And now he brings that expertise that very, very few members of Congress have to fighting the battle against terror. We are so well served to have him in an important position in the Congress on the war against terror. It is an ongoing war, and it's going to continue to be an ongoing war. And we're up against a different enemy, and it'll all be remembered now on September 11th. This is a fight we simply cannot give up, and it's great to have people involved like Rob.
And we turn next to Professor Christopher H. Pyle for another view on the Church and Pike Committees. Professor Pyle, you were there. You've heard the remarks. Tell us about your work at the time of the investigations that Rob Simmons was referring to.
Well, I used to work for Senator Church's Select Committee on Intelligence, and we did investigate the work of the CIA, as well as NSA, Army Intelligence, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Rob Simmons was out of the country at the time, but remembers George Bush fondly as the director who helped to rebuild agency morale. Perhaps he did, but I recall a number of CIA people being very bitter about what George Bush had done to cut back on the CIA's personnel in response to those pressures from the intelligence committees. And Simmons has not acknowledged, so far as I know, that there was a reason for those investigations. The CIA had a massive program of domestic spying going on called Operation Chaos. The CIA had assassination programs in foreign countries. The agency was expecting us to trust it, but was beyond accountability for many years. And that necessitated those congressional investigations. Simmons remembers those investigations as an attack upon the CIA. I prefer to remember them as an attack upon governmental wrongdoing, which had to be corrected. He implies that the intelligence committees hurt the CIA. Well, they may have also helped it, because they helped to create two committees that are permanent now in Congress, which have been sounding boards for CIA personnel when they're planning various operations. And at the moment, they are enthusiastic advocates for the CIA and exercise no oversight whatsoever. So I would say that well, it may not have been intended by the intelligence committees back then, but the result has been something that any supporter of the CIA should be pleased with. But it was quite unintentional.
Now, at the time, one Donald Rumsfeld, as I recall, and also someone named Ellsworth, I believe, were working diligently to sort of protect the CIA from further inquiry, but also to save it. I mean, there was talk about disbanding the CIA at that time, right?
Yes, there was, but that did not have an enormous amount of support. The general attitude in the United States is to reform things, not to destroy them. I don't think we've ever come out and destroyed an intelligence agency in our history. There's one that we did. We wiped out the U.S. Army Intelligence Command because of its domestic spying. I happen to disclose that spying. But generally speaking, we try to reform them, not destroy them.
Talk a little bit about Vietnam, because that would be where Representative Simmons was serving. There was a program there that did come under scrutiny called the Phoenix Program. It was assassination. Talk about that a little bit and what you learned as you looked at things like this in Vietnam.
Well, it's hard to get good records on the Phoenix Program, but the best research that's been done on it estimates that maybe as many as 25,000 people were killed by this covert operation, which was run by William Colby, who later became director of the CIA. It was a program of capturing and interrogating and then sometimes doing away with persons thought to support the Viet Cong. And it is remembered by historians today as sort of a precedent for the torture program that we have at the moment.
Former President George H.W. Bush talked about the fact that gentlemen do read each other's mail. That, of course, in the context of these inquiries, should strike a memory with you, because there was the discovery that mail was in fact being read, and in some cases it was the mail of politicians running for office, and in others the mail of average Americans, right?
Yes, we discovered the CIA had a secret mail opening program. The Army also had a small one itself. The Army's was overseas. The CIA's was, I think, in the U.S. as well as overseas. And they were opening first-class mail in direct violation of federal law. The FBI also did some of that. This is a violation not only of a federal statute, but also of the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which protects our persons and papers and effects from warrantless searches by government agencies. But they were violating that massively.
Did you get the sense overall, just trying to remember now, it was quite a while ago, but did you get the sense that the true believers in the CIA who thought these programs were good or in some way beneficial to collecting intelligence, that they had one specific characteristic, attitude, politique, if you will? You know, it seems that was a different age, and there was a sense of entitlement or a sense that anything that needed to be done should be done in order to gather intelligence. Can you characterize that time for us a little bit and perhaps contrast it with today?
When people think they are at war, they assume that the end justifies any means. And the Cold War was such a war. It was a metaphorical war, not unlike the war against terrorism, except we moved from communists to terrorists. And there is a belief then that our secret governmental agencies should be unrestrained in what they do to fight that covert war. And when that happens, criminal activities occur. And at the moment, we have a policy of torturing people and abusing them terribly in prisons. It comes from the highest levels of our government. It is criminal. It violates the Geneva Conventions and the War Crimes Act of 1996, as well as the legislation implementing the Convention Against Torture. It also, when it's carried out by the military, violates the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But there is a belief that because this is a secret operation, that it can be carried out because secret people aren't bound by the Constitution. But our Constitution applies to all employees of the U.S. government, including those in the CIA. And although they may assume that secrecy immunizes them from accountability, that is not the case legally. Whether the Justice Department will prosecute is another matter, but at least one CIA contractor has already been convicted for killing a prisoner.
Do you find that you recall any aspect to this that had to do with the business involved in the CIA, as it were? You know, there were contracts going on, certainly, back in Indochina. And as I recall, there were some questions about various contracts even then. And we're looking at, you know, questions being raised about reconstruction contracts in Iraq. Is there also, do you think, a sense that big business, where it stands to profit from the kind of intelligence that might be picked up by some of our spies abroad, that business should have access to people who know what's going on abroad in order to better take advantage and better carry out U.S. interests?
Well, after the Iron Curtain came down, the CIA and NSA, searching for things to do that might be of use to the United States, began to develop a capability to monitor economic intelligence matters. To monitor contracts that might be obtained by foreign countries competing with the United States. And we've never had a good handle on just what they have done to help American corporations. But you may remember back at the end of the Eisenhower administration, the president warned us about a military-industrial complex that he said that warfare today is not simply a matter of dealing with foreign policy. It is a matter of responding to pressures from those who build weapons systems and who service the armed forces. He warned against the military-industrial complex because of its growing political power to shape what the United States does abroad. Well, if Eisenhower were with us today, he would be warning us about the surveillance-industrial complex. There are a lot of companies poised to make a lot of money in secret contracts without close oversight, or any oversight at all, except maybe within the CIA's accounting office. And these companies are designing software for wiretapping, for eavesdropping, for searching databases, for data mining, for bringing together all sorts of private databases into corporate databases. And there are companies that do big searches on individuals now, right out of their own files, under contract with the intelligence agencies of the United States. This is a huge new industry, and it will have considerable political power within a few years. Attorney General John Ashcroft, when he retired from the Justice Department, opened a lobbying business. And his chief clients are members of this surveillance corporate world. And so he's out there trying to drum up business for them in secret contracts. Now, recently a book has been published on secret contracts in Iraq, and it shows the squandering of over $30 billion. Well, one of the CIA's secret contracts back in the 1950s and 60s, which we uncovered, was for research into methods of torture and coerced confessions. And the CIA spent in excess of $1 billion on that. You know that the current administration has been criticized for conducting warrantless wiretaps through the National Security Agency, which works closely with the CIA. The president claimed that, oh, this was a narrow program of communications between al-Qaeda folks and their American friends. Well, that was a deception. It was Operation Trailblazer. It was a massive data mining operation ransacking the fiber optic communications that passed through the United States and presumably included many millions of Americans as well as foreigners. That program cost over $1 billion. It turned out to be a total failure and has been canceled by General Hayden's successor, General Alexander, who heads the National Security Agency. It was a total waste of time. But it didn't just waste NSA's time. It wasted the time of the FBI and the CIA and other agencies that had to follow up the leads from this massive computer searching program. This is money which we as citizens could spend much better in other places, and perhaps spend it on promoting peace instead of supporting surveillance and war.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, you're welcome.
Christopher H. Pyle is author of The President, Congress, and the Constitution with Richard Pius, as well as Military Surveillance of Civilian Politics, and the more recent book, Extradition, Politics and Human Rights in 2001. He is presently working on a book he is calling The Art of Civil Discourse. In part two of this program on the 2nd District Congressional race in Connecticut, we hear from Democrat Joe Courtney and his supporters. We spoke with Courtney supporter Bob Kozik outside the Water's Edge Resort and Spa, where a group of protesters had gathered with candidate Courtney to talk about events inside. And again, we'll hear more of this next week. You say you served in the Korean War, and you're now very much against Simmons, and yet he has been running on military support. What do you make of that?
I don't believe that he's been running on military support. There are a lot of us veterans that have served in the war that are not for Simmons. It's just he's using that. It's just the same thing at the he said he saved the subbase, and it was a Captain John Markowitz who it really saved the subbase. I know that for a fact by knowing all the different captains and admirals around the country, and he got the former president Carter to come here and to help save the subbase. Simmons sits in the back, and it's just like with the CIA. They got us into this war with their unintelligence rather than intelligence, and then he wants us to believe that he's doing a great job. He's not doing anything for us. He's in back of Bush 100%, and he doesn't listen to any of the constituents in the 2nd District. If he did, then we wouldn't be in this situation that we're in now. Thank you.
Can I just ask you about the intelligence connections? There was a lot of discussion about the CIA ties between former President George H.W. Bush and Congressman Rob Simmons of the 2nd District in Connecticut, and the two of them spoke at length about their CIA ties, that they have become honorable again. And no, I just want to ask you what you think of that.
I don't think that they're honorable. I think that if they went to the Jewish intelligence over there, they would have got better reports than what they've given us Americans through the press. I don't believe either of the Bushes, and I don't believe Simmons. It's a war that we should never be in. They said that this war was because of what happened in New York. Of the 16 people that were killed in that thing, 14 were from Saudi Arabia and 2 were from Iran. None was from Iraq, but yet the war was in Iraq. No intelligence whatsoever did we get from the CIA. And you see the problems that we have with the CIA and the FBI and everything like that. They don't even talk to one another, so I don't know what's been going on all the years. But there are a lot of us veterans that are out there, and if you go around the country, you'll see a lot of veterans that are against the Bush administration.
Tell me your name again and where you're from.
My name is Bob Kozak. I'm originally from New London, Connecticut. I live in Waterford, Connecticut now.
Are you in the 2nd District?
I am in the 2nd District, yes.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, thank you.
For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced at WHUS Stores, radio for the people at the University of Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion.